And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
I'm not going left of those trees or right of those trees, okay? I'm going over those trees. With a little drop.
Yep.
I sure did.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Today is Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us anyway you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a share. Talk to us. We want to talk to you. Today on the show, there's a lot going on. Baseball starting to roll. NHL regular season ends tomorrow night. NBA play-in playoffs have started. Today's night two. NFL draft is 8 days away. A lot of stuff going on. We're going to start it with the Masters. Ah, a tradition like no other. And Scottie Scheffler with his second green jacket in 3 years. It's a final round, 4-under-68. He wins by 4 strokes over Oberg. He winds up winning $3.6 million. He did it with 7 birdies, 3 bogeys in the final round. He's the 18th person to win 2 Masters. He had 3 straight birdies on 8, 9, 10, and then 13, 14, 16. And Scottie Scheffler is our Masters winner, which none of us picked last week, by the way, because we didn't want to pick the ultimate favorite.
The heavy favorite we did not pick, no.
Exactly.
I think we all said it was Scheffler's Masters to lose. No, I mean, I think money down, gun to our head, we all would have picked Scheffler.
Yeah, I agree.
There's no doubt about with the way he's been playing. What a tournament for him. He was consistently terrific all 4 rounds. You know, you started off, you know, first day had the best weather, best scoring conditions. You know, DeChambeau opens up with a 65, which was the low round of the tournament. What does Scotty do? He shoots 66, second best of the day. Round two, Friday, the weather was really starting to turn. Very windy conditions. Chance for some big numbers out there. What does he do? 72, even par. Ninth best round of the day on a day where only Oberg shoots under 70. He shot 69. Round three, still the tough conditions. He puts up a 71 on a day where only Kirk and Morikawa broke 70. And of course, round four, he puts up the second best score of the round. He shoots a 68. Only Tom Kim from out of nowhere shoots a 66. So there was never a point where he put himself out of contention. He was always in contention all 4 rounds.
Couple of stats, 72 holes, right? He had 1 double bogey, 9 bogeys, 41 pars, 20 birdies, and 1 eagle.
Yep.
Just amazing round. Kev, sorry.
Amazing. Oh, that's okay. But, you know, with all that said, you know, he finishes up the 7th hole, and, you know, you look, Scheffler and Morikawa, after the 7th hole on Sunday, were tied at 6 under. And you had Oberg and Homa right there at 6 under after the 8th hole. And then what happens? Scheffler starts putting the birdies together. The 9th hole was a big swing between him and Morikawa. He almost buries it from the fairway. I mean, he hit the shot past the pin, rolled back, what, about a foot?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Morikawa wanted to put the bunker, sandwich out, just catches the lip, comes back in. He winds up with double bogey. There's a 3-shot swing. The rest of it, so his last 11 holes of the round, 6 birdies, 1 bogey, like you said, Gino, and you mentioned all the birdies that he had. So he shot 5 under the last 11 holes of the Masters.
Wow.
Oberg, 3 birdies, but he had the double on 11, which knocked him back. Morikawa, 2 over. He had 3 birdies, a bogey, but 2 doubles, a 9 and 11. So he was no factor. Max Homa, 2 birdies, but a bogey and a double. So all the other three guys in contention all had doubles. Scheffler had the 1 mistake, the 1 bogey. But other than that, he was spotless coming down the stretch there. And, you know, we wound up with Scheffler, Oberg, you know, 4 shots separating them. And then 3 back to Homa, Morikawa. And the guy I always pick, and I don't know why I didn't pick him for the top 10, Tommy Fleetwood. How many times have I picked him?
A lot.
You do. By the way, I did hit a top 10 parlay, G and Kev. Zalatoris and Cam Smith. So I won $297 on a $10 bet with that one. I was pretty excited about that.
Excellent.
And it would have been more, but because Zalatoris finished in the tie at the 10 spot, so it ended up technically being 11. And if he doesn't miss that short putt on 16 and finishes minus one, because the top 10, even par, got you to the top 10. That's how tough the tournament was. Guys.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a nice hit.
So like I said, some of the things about Scotty there, you know, he and Tiger Woods are the only two to win the Masters and the Players in the same year. Scotty with his two Masters, he's the fourth youngest to win two Masters, joining Nicklaus, Woods, and Seve.
Not bad.
And at plus 450, he was the shortest odds in the major since some guy named Woods in the 2008 U.S. Open when he was plus 200. So, I mean, just all around, you know, the expectation was that he would win, and he delivered.
Absolutely. A couple of points from me. Again, Scheffler wins going away. Somewhat anticlimactic down the stretch. But again, like you said, four-way tie at the same time as they're finishing seven and Homa and Olberg are finishing eight. By the way, Olberg, by the way, for a kid that never played this course, he looked very calm and confident.
Oh, he was throwing beanies look good
out there. On days that looked brutal, there was the one scene where he's walking and somebody knocks the bar out of his hand and he gives him, like, the look. It was hysterical. Yeah. He also hit the putt of the tournament. I mean, that putt he buried, what hole was that? It was, I think it was eight or seven. I'm not sure, but the one where the sweeping putt, I didn't write down the hole, so I apologize. And you know, Scotty almost answered it with a shot from off the green with the same roll. It was really, really cool to watch Olberg play. Just, I thought the weather was the star of the weekend for the most part, though. When I go through guys like this, okay, we don't get Spieth, doesn't make it, doesn't qualify, doesn't make the cut. Thomas doesn't make the cut. Hovland doesn't make the cut. Dustin Johnson doesn't make the cut. Zach Johnson, only because of the controversy where apparently he cursed out the fans, then he said he was cursing at himself. Nobody believes you. Bubba doesn't make it. Sergio doesn't make it. Harmon doesn't make it. Burns doesn't make it. Wyndham Clark doesn't make it. You have all these great players that don't even make the cut. And then the guys that do make the cut, Tiger gets to play on the weekend, goes into plus one, shoots plus 15 over the weekend, and you can see him sweating like crazy walking up there. And you just you never rooted for Tiger more than you have the last 5 years because you just want to see him play. But he finished a plus 16, the lowest finished guy that actually made the cut. Finau was plus 13. Tagala, we talked about. That's the only reason I'm bringing him up, plus 9. Kepka plus 9. Rom plus 9. Phil plus 8. Ricky plus 5. Day plus 5. Rory plus 4. Rory only sees performing these things when it's over. Then he has a good game just to make it exciting. Fitzpatrick plus 4. Neiman plus 4. And Cantlay plus 4. So you have all these great players. Nobody makes it. Makes any kind of run. None of those names make a run ever at any point. Fleetwood is the only guy that made a little bit of a run on Sunday, and that's only because he was out of it. You don't even know if Fleetwood would have done anything if he was in contention. So, it was weird. Top 10, again, ninth place was even par with Cam Young, Zalatoris, and Hatton. And Tyrrell Hatton's just the funnest guy to watch on the course. He's cursing the whole freaking time. You can't get enough of Tyrrell Hatton out there. Final round, again, like we said, it was exciting. Homa was hanging around. A couple of things with Homa. Calls himself a dog going into Sunday. I'm a dog. Win a freaking major. Then call yourself a dog. You ain't done crap. Yeah, you have 10 overall wins. I'm a dog. No, let somebody else call you a dog. You don't. Wait, you didn't get enough compliments, so you had to call yourself a dog? Get the hell out of here. It annoyed the hell out of me. Morikawa's, the two doubles on 9 and 11 just killed him on the back. And Dottie Pepper had an interesting point saying, his only two wins of majors were during the COVID years. And does he have a hard time playing with the crowds on Sunday? I didn't think about that at all, but I was like, wow, Bobby Pepper threw that barb out there. And I was like, that's a really freaking good point. I don't know if that's the case. He said that he was trying to be too perfect. He had like some sort of like reasoning where he was trying to, he just missed a couple of those shots or he would have been gold. I thought that again, Olberg was like one of those guys that you played so much better than I thought he was going to. And then I guess my final point would be goodbye to Vern Lundquist. I mean, one of the best, great voice for golf. Say goodbye to the Masters. I thought he handled it with such grace, and I thought his calls down the stretch were excellent. And I was really kind of, you know, a little sorry to see Vern go, but he's had his career and he was really good. Overall, though, Scotty, like you said, Kev, never was seemed like he was not in control, even when he was not leading. I mean, DeChambeau seemed to be battling. Everybody else seemed to be battling the whole time. But Scottie Scheffler is easily the best golfer in the world at this moment. Jake?
Yeah, I can't agree more. I mean, especially as we got to the back nine, Scottie seemed like he started to get into control. Everybody else was hitting those double bogeys. And all of a sudden, you know, you get down to those last five, six holes and you're like, unless he actually messes up, nobody's catching him at this point. And he just didn't mess up. He never had a problem going. When he got down to those last five, six holes, he was great under pressure. He was hitting shots that were just a couple of those shots, like Kev talked about before, that one shot was just unbelievable. I honestly thought it was going in, Kev.
We all thought it was going in.
That was
beautiful. And that's the same hole that Oberg hit the putt, which was amazing. The last 10 holes of the tournament, okay, Scotty shoots minus four, Oberg minus one, Homa plus two, Morikawa plus three. That's the difference. The last 10 holes of the tournament, he took it away. And Morikawa early on, Scotty was, I wouldn't say struggling, but he was not on holes one and two. Morikawa missed putts where he could have actually tied or taken the lead early. Did not hit any of those. And that's kind of what put him away. But again, Scotty Scheffler is going to be the man to beat all year long, barring an injury. I think that's what we stand on golf.
Any other golf points before we move on, guys? Okay. We'll move over to NHL. Regular season ends tomorrow. Islanders got in. They're a 7 seed. Rangers wound up clinching the number 1 seed with the President's Cup. Islanders are going to face Carolina. Rangers will face Washington in the first round. One of the big things that was accomplished the other day was Connor McDavid. He wound up getting his 100th assist, only the fourth person to do it. And when you're mentioned in the same sentence as Gretzky, Lemieux, and Bobby Orr, that's a hell of an accomplishment, let me tell you right now. 32 goals, 100 assists, unless something else happens. By the way, we want to applaud the 100 assists, but, you know, just so that we're all on the same page, last year it was 47 goals and 80 assists. So, yeah, he did have 20 more assists, but it's not like he had 50 more assists than last year. He's probably in line for MVP. Just a hell of a year. It's a shame Edmonton it can't be that much better, because then he would be the star in his league right now. Anything on hockey, Kev?
Yeah, a couple of notes just on the playoff matchups. You know, like I said, Rangers Washington, no interesting series. You know,
Patrick Division, baby.
Patrick Division. Carolina, the Islanders. Carolina's got the edge, of course, going in. Islanders have been hot. They're 7-0-1 in their last eight to get their way into the playoffs. They won their way in, plain and simple. With the way the results happened yesterday, now you set up in the other Eastern Conference division, whichever one that is, Florida and Tampa. Two Sunshine State teams battle each other. And in the original six matchup, Boston and Toronto. If that's not going to be a series to watch, if you love hockey, tune into that series. These two teams don't like each other. Out west, Dallas plays either the Canes or Vegas. We know Winnipeg plays Colorado. Vancouver's got Nashville. Edmonton right now would have Vegas. Canes are a possibility, depending on what happens tomorrow night with the Canes and the Golden Knights games. The other interesting one was the way Washington actually clinched their playoff spot. Washington played against Philly Tuesday night. Philly needed a regulation win plus help. So with 3 or 4 minutes left, Tortorella pulls the goalie. Washington scores an empty net goal in a tie game and winds up clinching their playoff spot because of that.
I mean, so what would you have done? What would you have done, Kev?
You've got to play for your team. You've got to pull the goalie and try to score to get the
I don't know if I would have done it at the 4 minute mark. I probably would have waited another minute and a half. I would have done it with about two and a half. Why he did it. I would have done it the same way.
Yeah. And it's just funny that, you know, because of the empty net, Washington gets in.
Yeah.
over Detroit, who won in overtime last night.
Yeah. And it's, but once Detroit went into overtime, that alone eliminated Philly, so it wouldn't have mattered. But just, you know, the fact that they needed the overtime win, the regulation win, and a bunch of other things to happen. The other round number to look at, Austin Matthews. Let's see now. They just scored. Did he score? No, it was Brody. There's about 5 minutes left. He's still at 69 goals. He made fall just short of 70.
Great season, though.
Great season.
Just amazing. Like I said, I know all the Islander fans hate anything that has to do with the Leafs because of Tavares, but Austin Matthews, American-born player, 69 goals to lead the league. You got to like that.
And I had mentioned Connor McDavid before that he may be in line for MVP. That's the one guy that may
the only
be
guy.
In line with him, which is Austin Matthews. Go ahead, Kev.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of the 100 assists, there have been 14 seasons that somebody's had 100 assists.
McDavid won.
McDavid won or won. Lemieux won. That leaves 11. 11 for a certain Mr. Gretzky.
Unbelievable.
Unreal. Just the stats, you know, just unreal with that.
Now, just a couple of points. So the Islanders make the playoffs red hot down the stretch, like I said. Varlamov over Sorokin. Thoughts?
I think Varlamov's going to go with a hot hand.
It's been Varlamov. Not that Sorokin's been bad, but Varlamov's been excellent. You stick with it, right?
I'll stick with the hot goalie.
Absolutely. Okay. Hot goalie. In the playoffs, that's what wins. That, listen, usually when you get to the playoffs, that's usually what pushes one of those teams to a couple of series wins is a hot goalie. Here it did it down the stretch here and got the Islanders in. Let's hope it continues as we get into the first round here.
Okay, you sit there and you look at the Islanders right now. Stop giving the puck away. Did a lot better defensively in the last, I don't know, maybe third of the season. How much credit goes to Wah and how much just goes to them getting healthy?
I think getting healthy has a lot to do with it. You get Pellick back, Pulak back, you know, that just automatically improves your defense right there. And then you've had great seasons. Dobson stepped up huge this year. Hopefully his injury is not too bad, that he'll be back for the playoffs. And I mean, of course, with the NHL, everybody's tight-lipped. Upper body injury, lower body injury.
Yeah. That's all we say.
That's all we get.
A blow to the head is an upper body injury.
Yeah. I will say 75% on being healthy and 25% changing the coach. Okay. I think changing the coach down the stretch changes everything up a little bit. And I think that was probably one of the things that this team needed was just to change, just whatever it is, just to change the flow of how they're doing everything to get everybody on the same page again. So
remember, they had to sell at the trade deadline. They were done. We're too old.
Yeah.
We're
not fast enough. Too old. And one of the guys he mentioned specifically was a guy named Kyle Palmieri, who has not played well at all. But you specifically called out Palmieri as a guy that maybe can get something back. Is Kyle Palmieri,
you feel
better about him now, Kev, than you did a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, hell yeah. I'll admit I was wrong. I'm glad I'm wrong.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you wouldn't admit you're wrong. I'm just saying Kyle Palmieri, of all people, seems to have risen to the occasion in a tremendous way. I mean, the whole Islander team is getting timely goal scoring, great goaltending. They're not giving the puck away. And it's just a team that I think, you know, listen, Carolina on paper is the superior squad. They have a few more scorers than the Islanders do. I don't think that they're superior in net, and I don't think they're superior on defense. I think they're just as good. I don't think they're better. I think what it comes in is their line depth of who can put the puck in the net. So it means Palmieri has to keep it going. Otherwise, they won't have that type of luck, so to speak. But I think that they're in this series. G, what do you think?
I think Islander penalty killing has got to be better for them to win this series against Carolina. Without that, I think they're going to have a very hard time. The way their penalty killing has been lately, it hasn't been so bad, but it's like one of the bottom three, I believe, in the NHL, and that has to be better for you to win, especially as you get into these tight games in the playoffs. So
I think that a little bit better of late. when we get the power play, you know, can we be like the NFL and decline the penalty? I'd rather play 5-on-5 right now.
Yeah.
They look like they have no idea what they're doing on the power play. And they've given up a couple of shorthanded goals.
Yeah.
Recently.
And this is with a guy like Barzal, who was just a dominant puck controller. They have struggled with Dobson, who has a cannon. With you know, Horvat, who seems to be in the right place at the right time, so they definitely have the skill to do it. I give Wah a little bit more credit than you guys do. I think the upgrade of Wah over Lambert is something substantial. I don't think it's a minor thing, and the reason why I say that is just the way he happens to he goes off on these guys when they don't do something right. He reminds me a little bit of Kurt Russell, where he's going to take the whistle out and after the game, and they're going to be doing, you know, Herbies all the way up and down. I mean, he just seems like he gets angry and he gets agitated, and Lambert just seemed to be a little stoic. And I thought it was, I think his approach is definitely a benefit for this Islander team. So Kevin, Islanders versus the Canes, who wins this series?
Hurricanes in 6.
Gino.
Islanders in 7.
I'm going to go Islanders in 6. I think the Islanders are playing well right now. Again, you know, my team's out. I'm rooting for the Isles to get through. I think Varlamov continues the trend. If he slips up, there's no team in hockey that has Sorokin behind them that's ready to go. So this team is definitely ready to go. I'm pumped to see what the Islanders do. Now let's go to the Rangers for a quick minute. President's Cup winner, last President's Cup team to win the Cup. 12-13 Chicago Blackhawks. Great year. I mean, Panarin was unbelievable. This team has been great all season long. Shesterkin down the stretch looks like the best goalie in the world right now. Gee, can they break the curse? Is this Ranger team built to break the curse? I'm not saying you're going to predict it, but do you think they're good enough to break the curse of the president?
Yeah, I think they're that good. I do think they're that good. But, you know... NHL playoffs are a funny thing, and that is anybody can be beat in the NHL playoffs. And that's why the last President's Cup winner to win is goes back to, you know, 11, 12 years ago. That's the reason, because just because you are great in the regular season doesn't mean you're going to win the playoffs. Listen, I think they can win. I think the competition in the East is strong enough that they're going to have their hands full as they go through this. You know what, Darren, you're the one non-Islander fan in this bunch.
Yep.
What, how many rounds do they have to win for you to clarify this as a really good season?
Well, you got to remember last year they lost to the Devils. They were up 2-0. And they lost that series. So, you know, it looked like people were talking sweep. They won 2 in New Jersey. And then the Devils just kind of – they made the goalie switch to Ankara Schmidt, who we never saw really at all this year.
Yeah.
Until like December. And, you know, it just seemed like the Rangers couldn't solve him. But this year, so good all around. The goaltending's been outstanding. The defense is physical. The skill players are, you know, fast. And they are good. I think that this team has to make it to the Cup Finals in order for it not to be a successful year. If they do anything less than making it to the Finals, getting out of the East, then I think it's a disappointment. Because, listen, they have to beat Washington, okay? This is not a series that you can afford to lose in any way. They're better than Washington. They should beat Washington.
They really need to take Washington out in 5.
Yeah, I mean, Washington.
And just get done with them quickly.
If they win more than a game, it's a disappointing series. Then you're going to be against the Islander Kane most likely matchup right there. I'd say Islanders, it could be the Canes. Again, two good teams. Rangers should be able to get through that as well. So the whole thing for me is going to come down to them. I mean, it's kind of like cup or bust to an extent, but, you know, Dallas played so well. We're talking about 1-point differential for the President's Cup. So, I mean, it's not like it's a huge disparity where they were 20 points ahead or 10 points ahead of anybody, but I think they have to get all the way to the Cup Final.
All right. So for you, they have to get to the finals for this to be a good year.
Yes.
They get knocked out against Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals in six games, and this is still not a great year.
I would say it's a disappointment. I think that this team is expected to do more. I mean, this is a very talented Ranger team. Yeah. It really is. And there is something to be said for how hard they play, the Laviolette factor, which Kev called early before it started. I think they have the coaching, they have the defense, they have the goaltending, they have the offense. I think they can roll out lines and they can play physical and they have everything going for them. They have to find a way to get to the cup final. And if they do that, they'll be successful. So Rangers, Caps, any chance anyone think that the Caps win this series?
Like I said, I see them winning in five, the Rangers. So I don't see any chance of them winning.
Yeah, I think it's the Rangers. It's got to be five, probably five.
Okay, I think four, but I'll stretch it to five. Bruins, Leafs, who wins the series, Kev?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, wow is right, but we know the matchup, so let's pick it.
I'd be shocked if it doesn't go seven.
Yeah.
I'll take Boston at home in game seven. That's the only reason I would take Boston. But I think this series goes seven. It's that close.
Jake?
Boston.
I'm taking the Leafs in six. I think the Leafs get through. And then the Battle of Florida, Kev. Panthers, Lightning.
Florida's been the better team all year. They got ahead of Boston to finish first in that division. Tampa's talented, though, like with Kucherov and a few other players that they've got there. I think this is another series, but I think Florida pulls it out in probably about six.
Jake?
I'm going to go Florida also.
We're going to go with a sweep with Florida, I think. I'm going to take Florida in seven. So, okay, we'll do the West. We'll do that on Facebook because we don't know the matchups yet, so we're not going to just make one matchup prediction. Definitely, you know, we'll wait for the other four to be secured, and then we'll do it. But the three, all right. I should say. But we have our NHL. All right, G, back to you.
All right, we're going to head over to baseball. Yankees still hot. They're at 13-6. Mets at 10-8. Kev, we talked about a couple weeks ago. We knew they were starting off really slow. They would turn it around. Other hot teams right now, Baltimore's 12-6, Yankees 13-6, Cleveland 12-6, Texas 10-9, but leading the West. Surprise in the AL West is Houston at 6-13 right now. Atlanta 11-5, Mets at 10-8. We said Philly 11-8. Milwaukee, the Cubs, the Pirates, they all have 11 wins, and the Dodgers. They're 12-9. Currently, they're leading the West. Big thing with the Yankees this week came out, and it actually happened very quickly. After 36 years in the Yankee broadcast booth, John Sterling retired at 85 years old. He's going to be honored on April 20th in a pregame ceremony. He called 5,420 regular season games and 211 postseason games for the Yankees. Any baseball thoughts, guys?
Go ahead, Kev.
All right, Mets. You know, like I said, 10-3 after the 0-5 start. And I'm not saying all these teams were thought to be this good, but you look at what they've played so far: Milwaukee 10-6, Detroit 10-7, Cincy 9-8. Atlanta 11-5, Kansas City 11-6, Pittsburgh 11-8. Only the Minnesota Twins have faced what's been by record the tougher schedule. And I'm not saying all these teams were expected to be good. I mean, it's partly when you play teams, but they've had a pretty challenging early stretch. They survived their own 5 start. They've done it really on the strength of their bullpen more than anything else. The starters have been good. They just don't go deep. You know, Buda's gone 6 innings twice. Manaya went 6 innings his first start. Severino went 6 innings today, Wednesday, against the Pirates. Those are the only 4 guys who've gone 6. In 22 starts, you've got to have guys go more than 4 times, go 6 innings. The bullpen's been terrific. Raley, 0 ERA. Reed Garrett, 0 ERA, struck out 17 of 31 batters faced. Drew Smith, 1.08. Diaz, 1.29. Lopez under 2, Ottavino at 2.5. I mean, no, that's 7 guys right there who are pitching real well right now in the bullpen, and that's what's carrying them and giving them a chance to come back and win. Because, you know, on offense, Marte looks good. Alonso's got 6 home runs. Beatty's off to a great start, both at the bat and with the glove. You know, a couple of role players, Bader and Taylor, played real well. And they've helped to make up for the fact that Lindor's hitting 150 and Nimmo's hitting 217 and McNeil's hitting 218. You know, so if, when these guys start to get hot, I mean, you know Lindor's not going to hit 150. He's a 30-30 guy. Nimmo's going to be, you know, up near 370 on base. McNeil will hit. You know, once these guys start to hit, you know, when the pitching starts to fall back a little bit, maybe the offense can start to pick up a little bit and keep them in contention for at least a wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as the one guy that picked the Mets to make the playoffs, thank you very much.
Yep.
The pitching's been solid. Again, I don't believe in the starting rotation. I don't think it holds up for the most of the season. I think that they're going to have to win with their pen. Garrett, no one expected. You know, Raleigh was good last year. Diaz has kind of got into form pretty quickly, which is fantastic. You know Lindor's going to hit. Alonso's already started to get his bat really going. The Mets are going to be do I think the Mets are a 90-win team? Probably not. But do I think they can win 86? Do I think they can win 88? I do think they can come in that range. And I think that this team is, you know, really, really, you know, solid all around. The offense, I think, is going to be fine. It doesn't show it right now, but I think the offense is going to be fine. Nice sweep against Pittsburgh. Again, you mentioned those teams, but none of those teams you would sit there and circle as like, wow.
Oh, no.
Detroit is great. You know, Atlanta is the team that they did something special with. Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh started off amazing last year, and then they fell apart. I don't count the record as much as you do, but at the same time, 0-5, chance of going to 0-6, turning that game around, coming back, and they've been really good ever since. So, great job by the Mets. On the Yankee side, hey, listen, they avoided a sweep. I'm sorry, go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, just looking at Pittsburgh for a second since the Mets just played them. Tuesday night, and this is where I've got to go on my rant about baseball nowadays. Jared Jones for Pittsburgh, you know, young starter. 5 innings, 59 pitches, 50 strikes, 1 hit allowed, no walks, obviously, 7 strikeouts. It was his first time pitching on 4 days rest in the major leagues. Therefore, we have to yank him. It was predetermined that he was going to go 5 and no more. Guy has thrown 59 pitches. Couldn't have been any easier since he only threw 9 balls. Let him stay out there. Instead, you bring in your, you know, middle relief, and let's face it, most teams' middle relief is not good.
No.
And that opened up the door for the Mets to pull off a win when they had no right to win if they probably keep Jones in there.
Well, I mean, listen, do I expect them to go 8 with Jones? No. Do I expect them to go 6? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with baseball. Again, they don't teach these guys how to pitch. They teach them how to throw. They teach them to throw as hard as you can for as many pitches as you can go. You're going to hurt your arm. You're going to hurt your shoulder. You're going to hit your elbow. We're going to do a surgery on you. You're going to do a second surgery on you. You're going to still get paid when you come back. All you need is one good season in your contract year. Just see the career of Blake Snell. That'll show you how you're going to get that done. And that's what it is. I mean, that's what it's come down to. I don't need to throw an 89. Just think, Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine wouldn't even get drafted right now. They wouldn't even get looked at.
He was under 60 pitches.
I'm just saying, in general, you know, I mean, you wouldn't even look at those two guys right now. You wouldn't even sit there and entertain those guys being on your team. You would look at Tony Gwynn right now. Oh, he doesn't hit for enough power. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that are stars that we wouldn't even consider back in the day because of the way baseball has become metric and become geeky, nerdy guys looking at stats but not looking at the actual player and not understanding the situation that they're in. It makes it really brutal to watch, and I think you're 100% right. Getting to the Yankees. Avoided the sweep today, G. As good as they're playing, the bullpen blew the game on Sunday after the offense gave him the lead. Volpe, until today, had been playing amazing in the leadoff role, basically. He did not have a strong day today, but he's been good throughout. Well, really, the series, it wasn't great. But the Yankees have been, 13-6, like you said. They've been really good. The pitching's been solid. Still don't love the pen. Holmes got another save today, though, so I got to shut my mouth again, but I still don't love it. Question for you. Soto.
Unbelievable.
Is he too patient at the plate?
No.
A lot of debate on the fact that he does not get aggressive in big spots. I'm asking this for both of you. I'll start with you, G.
I don't think so. I mean, he's hitting 350, 352 to be exact. His slugging is 500. His on base is 447. in 16 at bats, he's got 16 walks and 11 Ks. His walks are higher than his Ks. I mean, I'm not sure what else you want the guy to do. I don't mind it. I do think, though, that somewhere along the line, this is starting to impact Judge, because I don't think Judge, he's getting all those pitches, and because Soto is so patient. But yeah, for me, no, I don't think so. Kev?
I don't see it as much either. You know, 19 games, he's got 17 RBIs. So obviously he's got to be driving and run somewhere along the way. He's not that patient. Otherwise he'd have about 9 RBIs. Now, 8th and 9th inning, do you want to maybe take a hack at maybe an extra pitch? I'll give you that. Maybe. But, you know, I'd rather him still not chase. If he doesn't like the pitch, lay off it. I mean, you've got Judge behind you. Judge will eventually hit. And, you know, Soto does not have to be a one-man team in this lineup.
I agree with both of you guys on this. For me, Soto, I don't want him changing his approach at all, by the way. If you're uncomfortable, if you don't think you could do something with a pitch, don't swing at it. I mean, unless it's a strike with 2 strikes on you. I mean, don't swing if you can't do something with a pitch. Again, the Yankee lineup is built to be stronger. This Stanton's off to a really nice start for Stanton, better than any of us thought he would be off to. Judge has not been hitting great, but he'll be okay. Cabrera's been outstanding. A lot of good things going on with this Yankee team. I know that they struggled a little bit up in Toronto, but came from a 4-1 deficit today to come back, tie it up in the 9th and win it. So great job by them. Overall, like you said, a lot of teams playing really, really well. You look at the White Sox, they were 2-14 going into today. You know, yeah. Houston was 6-13 going into today. Miami and Colorado both 4-14 going into today. Mookie Betts hitting .388 with an on base of .490. You got to love that. Azuna, not to bring up a guy that you guys hate in the Bravo, well, Kev hates, .364, .417 on base, 7 homers, 22 ribbies. Tying O'Neill and Trout having a little rebound with the 7 homers. Azuna with the 22 ribbies to tie Gurriel and Ward, who have 20 each. Acuna, Lane Thomas, and Tarang each have 8 stolen bases. You know, we got a few pitchers that are pitching lights out. Reed Detmers, 3-0 with a .140 batting average against. Gallons, 3-0 with a .114. Berrios, 3-0 with a .105. Bradford, 3-0 with a .140. Not even counting guys like Lugo and Glasnow and Grayson Rodriguez and Ranger Suarez. I mean, you know, lots of good players off to really good starts. So baseball's off running and going well so far for both New York teams, especially after that early start by the Mets, for them to rebound like they have. Very impressive. Will the Mets go below .500 again this season, Kev? 10-8 right now. Yes. G?
Yes.
Okay. I think so, too. I think they're going to have their ups and downs, but I think they're going to be close around that mark all year.
With this starting rotation, they can very easily get a 3-4 game losing streak or go stretch. You know, they lose 4 out of 6 or 5 out of 7.
No, I agree.
They don't have a stopper.
Yeah. I agree.
Like Quintana's not a stopper? Anyway.
I think I see him for more than 5.
I think I have exhausted my notes in baseball. G, back to you, pal.
All right.
Two deaths this week. The Last of the Boys of Summer from the old Brooklyn Dodgers book back in the 40s. Carl Erskine passed away. And then the manager we grew up watching, Whitey Herzog, also passed away. The inventor of Whitey Ball, as they said, you know, small ball. You know, let's take advantage of line drive hitters and take advantage of our speed. And he's, you know, he's another guy like La Russa probably brought in a lot of the bullpen usage as well.
That carpet was also really interesting because they would sit there and just play because they played off that really hard turf.
Yeah.
And that ball would just bounce over fielders, right fielders' heads or left fielders' heads that were just coming in on balls and stuff like that. But I always remember that Tommy Hurst season in 85.
What are you, home eight, runs, 100.
8-108 or something like that?
I was going to say 9-110 or, you know, right like around that. There.
Less than 10 homers, drove in over 100 runs. The only power hitters ever on that team were Jack Clark, or before that was Hendrick. Everybody else was there slapping the ball around. Willie McGee for Bob Sykes. The Yankee fans remember that. Willie McGee hit .353 one year for that team. They had guys like Lonnie Smith and Ozzie Smith and Whitey.
Vince Coleman.
Yeah, Vince Coleman, of course. And he did the same thing with the Royals first. Yep. Willie Wilson hitting triples all over the yard.
Frank White. You know, George
Brett. Darryl Porter. I mean, he did a great job. And also an aggressive manager out there. Not quite Earl Weaver, but he would and Billy Martin, but he would get a little scrappy out there with the umps as well.
I mean, really, if he didn't have to run up against those late 70s Yankees, he may have won the World Series with the Royals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move over to NBA.
We waited long enough.
Knicks get the number two.
The game just ended.
Yes.
Knicks get the number two seed, and we'll play Philadelphia, who won tonight against Miami. Kev, want to start it up?
Yep. So, generally, like you said, the game just ended. Philly beats Miami 105-104. Boy, what a prize for finishing with the second best record in the Eastern Conference. You get Philadelphia in the first round. Yay. I think the big thing really is going to be the health and the stamina. Has he shaken off enough rust of Joel Embiid? That, to me, is really the deciding factor of the series. If he's still working his way back into playing shape, because he's only been back for a short time now, I think with Robinson and Hartenstein, they really have to go after him and make him work hard and try to get him, like I said, hopefully his condition isn't quite what it should be. On offense, they've got Maxey, who averaged 26 points a game this year. I think on defense, they can run Harris or Oubre or Milton at Brunson to try to slow down Brunson a little bit. I think it's going to be a tough matchup. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, well, here's my question. Where do the Knicks have to be to have a successful year? Where do they have to – what round do they have to get to?
I think they – I would really like to see them get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right. G, your thoughts?
That to me is successful.
G, your thoughts?
I think they need to win one round and play well in the second round.
Okay. I think I agree with Kev. They did that last year, so I agree with Kev. I think they have to get to the final. But to do that, who do you think you're playing in the Eastern Conference Final?
Boston.
All right, so you had to beat Philly anyway. The people that sit there and cry to me that, they should have stayed in the three seed.
You got to be home for the second series.
You got to be home for the second series. And if you're working with Freakin' Salt, you're going to beat Philly. And if you're not and you're a fraud, and this is the problem with Thibodeau teams in the past, okay? They play their asses off all season. They never take a night off, and they don't have that extra gear in the playoffs because they play hard every single night. The question's going to be, can they kick it up an extra notch here to win this series? Embiid is the best player on the floor, but not by as much as it would look like in the start of the season. Brunson is right there with him, okay? Maxey might be player three, but he might not be. I would probably give him the nod. But the Knicks should be able to be 4-7, and no matter what anybody in Philly tells you that it doesn't matter after that, it freaking does. They got to be better than Nick Batum. They got to be better than everybody else that they sit there and throw out. The Knicks have to find a way to win this series. If they're going to be taken seriously, then we're going to have to beat Philly anyway. Get it over with now. You have the home court advantage against Indiana, Milwaukee in the next round, which should allow you to get to that final. And that's what it comes down to. But to do that, you're just mixing it up a little bit. So rather than playing Indiana first, you're playing Philly first to get to Indiana or Milwaukee in another series that you think you should win, especially if Giannis isn't 100%. So you know what? Enough of the crybaby stuff about, you should have lost. Bullshit. You win. You win every game because you want to be home in the next series. Excuse my language. But it's time for the team to show up.
You play to win the game.
Exactly. And if they don't have a plan to free up Brunson against whoever Philly throws on him in a seven-game series, then that's on Tibbs. He's got to have a plan. He's got to find a way to free him up. DiVincenzo's got to hit shots. Anunoby is a defensive player that Philly hasn't seen. Okay? This guy is the best defensive stopper on the court if he's healthy. And that's going to be the key for this team. If he can take Maxey out of this series – and he can limit Maxey, the Knicks win this series in five.
And I think Anunoby
I think they will.
I think Anunoby can give him enough offense too.
Oh, he certainly can.
Well, those corner threes, he's real good at, and he's getting a little bit better about taking the drives also. I mean, his offensive game, when he's been healthy, looks a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually.
And, you know, to me, if he can, like you said, assuming he's on Maxey, if he can get pretty close, I'm not going to say he's going to outscore Maxey, but if he can be within a couple of points of Maxey every night, that's a huge win for the Knicks right there.
That's what it comes down to, and he's got to make Maxey work. If he can make Maxey work and you're sitting there waiting for the other players to chip in, the Knicks supporting cast is better than Philly supporting cast. And Bede's going to score, okay? There's nothing you can do about it. He's just a skilled offensive center. But the fact of the matter is that this is the Knick time right now. They have to find a way. If they don't find a way, then it's been then all we've gotten is to celebrate Brunson as a great regular season player. That's that simple. I mean, you know, it really is that simple. And we'll know the other matchup against Boston later because that game's going on right now. But I think that the Knicks have a legit shot of winning this series in five if Anunoby is up to par. G, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree completely with what you guys said about the seeding. You got to win. Get the number two seed. Whoever comes your way, if you're good enough, you're going to win. Listen, you may not have to go through Philadelphia and Milwaukee to get to Boston, but if you're that good and you're going to get to the conference finals, that's who you're going to get to anyway. We all think that Boston's getting there, so to get there, you would have had to have faced at least one of them in any of the scenarios. Now you're going to have to go through Philly and the Bucks to get there probably. If seeding holds true, right?
So I think the Pacers are going to beat the Bucks. That's my personal opinion, by the way.
Pacers have won 3 out of 4 against the Bucks.
Yep, they've owned them this year.
Giannis is probably out for most, if not all, of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that sets it up for the Pacers to win the series, and you know, sets up the Knicks playing at home against the Pacers in the second round.
I agree. And we'll put all of our predictions on Facebook for everybody because the matchups aren't all set. We know Orlando's playing Cleveland as well. That was 2-2 during the regular season, so we'll see what happens with that. But this is the time. The Knicks have to get to the Eastern Conference Final. Last year they got to the semi, in my opinion. Gee, I don't disagree that you're right, that it's been a fun season. This is a season that's galvanized NBA in New York for the first time in a long time because the Nets had never really taken all that seriously. And plus their big three was unlikable by most fans. So this is kind of a real big deal. You have to be Philly. I mean, this is what it comes down to. A, Philly sucks as a city, as everything. B, you got to beat them. All right.
Kev, what about out West?
All right, well, we don't know who OKC is playing yet. They're playing the winner of the Pelicans-Kings.
And while we're on that for a second, so Zion gets hurt late last night.
Yeah.
Hamstring.
He put up 40.
He had the game of his life. Afterwards, you're seeing Shaq and Barkley saying, I wouldn't have came out. They're basically saying, you had to drag me away. Yeah, I mean, there was like no way. His health has been his nemesis here. He just can't stay on the court. And you look at a team that looked like they were fighting for the 3 or the 4 seed most of the way, maybe even the 5 at worst. Suddenly they find themselves in the play-in game, and now they're playing for their lives against a Sacramento team that they blew out 4 times this year. Didn't blow them out all 4, but they won all 4. So you feel bad for New Orleans being in this predicament, especially because you don't want to see them lose to the Lakers. Sorry, Kevin, I'm going to cut you off.
No, that's fine. So the Lakers beat the Pelicans. They get to play the Nuggets. I don't see how the Nuggets can't pull this one off in 5 games.
I agree.
You've got Minnesota versus Phoenix. That should be an interesting series.
Without Carl Anthony Towns, it gets a little strange for me with Minnesota. I know they have Gobert, and obviously they have the kid that can light it up with Edwards, but it's like, Phoenix just has so much talent, don't they? I mean, it's scary how good they, on paper, they are anyway. I'm not saying that they're great, but on paper, they're outstanding.
Durant, Booker. Yeah, it's.
Beal.
Beal. Yeah, that's what it's blanking on. Thank you.
Bradley Beal. I mean, you know, this is a freaking all-star team over there.
Yeah. And then you've got the Clippers and the Mavericks, who have been locked in pretty much four or five for a couple of days now. Just in the playing game, too, just mentioned, the Golden State lost to the Kings. Klay Thompson, who to me was the most likable guy on the Warriors teams for the last decade, 0 for 10 to maybe end his Warriors career.
Yeah, it could be.
The Kings were another team that wasn't in the playoff consideration. Then they lost Monk and Herter, and they lost two of their top six, and the injuries just kind of mounted up on them. It happens to every NBA team. Not an excuse for the Kings, but that's where they faltered a little bit. And for them, they won last night. Keegan Murray had an amazing game. He had like 32 last night for the Kings. The Aaron Fox is a great player. Either way, if they find a way to get past New Orleans, I don't see any way that they could beat OKC.
No.
OKC, who, by the way, again, on paper, you wouldn't have picked as the one seed in the West, but they're the one seed in the West, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty cool. I think the Mavericks are going to get by the Clips, and I think the Suns are going to get by the Wolves. And I think the Nuggets win, and I think OKC wins. But we'll put it all on Facebook for everyone to see and all that other stuff. But, yeah, the NBA playoffs are here, and in about 3 months we'll be able to tell you who wins, because that's how long it is in between every freaking game. So you can get no flow and no excitement ever for any series. That's why the NBA sucks. Not game just seven. The league tournament, not just everything about the NBA is annoying as all hell.
Game seven of the first round is like Memorial Day, isn't it?
It's freaking ridiculous. You're right. I mean, I know you're exaggerating, but you're not exaggerating by all that much. We're in mid-May, and they're playing game seven. It's like, what? Well, not mid-May, early May, but still, these series should be two on, one off, two on, one off. One on, one off, you know, whatever. If they're playing 2-2-1, if they're playing 2-3-2, great. Two on, one off, three on, one off. You don't need all these days off. Play basketball. You have to own the network for the thing. And that's why the ratings are never great.
Yeah.
Because you lose interest. And when your team falls out, you're bored of basketball a little bit. You're just like, well, I can watch game five. Yeah. It's like, come on. NBA's horrible. Makes hockey look like they're organized. And we know hockey's anything but organized. G?
Okay. The other NBA news that came out today, the NBA issued a lifetime ban to Toronto Raptors forward Jonte Porter. He's the brother of Michael Porter Jr.
of the Nuggets.
On Wednesday for violating league gambling rules. And after an investigation, the league found Porter guilty of, and I quote, disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes and betting on NBA games. I would like to say this is probably the last of such things for the sports leagues in general. However, I do not think that this will be the last of it. Definitely the first big one that we've seen now. For any of these leagues where it's a lifetime ban now for someone that's actual, you know, an actual player. Any comments, guys?
The league's in bed with gambling. They're flat out in bed. You sit there and you watch anything, and the odds for the second half, the odds for a player, the odds for the next point, whatever it is, all these leagues are in bed. If they don't think that this is going to be hard to police, they're crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
This is just like, I mean, listen, you know when you join the league, they tell you can't gamble. They go over it over and over and over again. But these guys, they're not that bright. I mean, there's no reason to do it. You're going to – listen, you're a guy that even if you're a bench guy in the NBA, you're going to make millions of bucks. How greedy do you really need to be? I mean, you're going to have a 4 or 5 year career, and then you're going to go over and play in, you know, in Turkey. Or you're going to go over and play in Greece. Or you're going to go over and play in China or Israel or wherever. And you'll play another 5 years. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, but the league's as much as culpable as the player is, in my opinion. Kev?
Yeah. I think at this point, you almost have to be stupid as a player to get caught.
You're right.
I mean, they're going to be watching you. You can get away with some stuff. But once you start leaking information, that's where league definitely wants to see the line drawn. You know, that gets into point, potential point shaving, you know, really getting down into the real illegal stuff. More than just, you know, to me, you put a bet on the game, that's one thing. But when you start, you know, like I said, limiting your own participation or doing this or that, that's when it gets to be.
Of course.
Totally when illegal. When you act like a criminal.
You are a criminal.
You are a criminal. And, you know, as much as we would say, we hope this doesn't happen again. They are in bed with 125%, and this is what's going to happen at some point. So, anything else with the NBA, guys? Kev, you want to touch on the NBA, the WNBA draft this week?
Yeah, so it's shocking. Caitlin Clark went number one. The amazing number was 2.5 million viewers for the WNBA draft on Monday night. Just for comparison, last year, they averaged 572,000. The all-time record was 600,000 back in 2004 when Diana Taurasi went number one. That's how long ago that was. You know, a lot of spotlight probably for the first time in 30 years on the WNBA. Everybody's complaining, oh, I can't believe Clark's rookie contract. How could she be paid so little when the men's players made so much? And guys, of the three of us, I'm probably the most biggest proponent of women's basketball.
Only because you came to South Carolina. Let's not act like you were a proponent before that.
I'm always like, I've watched more than you guys have over my life. But you know what? Shut up. The WNBA is fully subsidized by the NBA. It does not make money. The money's not there. You want your piece of the pie? You've got your piece of the pie. It's not a big pie to cut up. So deal with it. If this changes, if you want to see her make money, then you know what? Go out there. If you're WNBA, go out, fill up the arenas, buy the jerseys, everything else. Maybe this will be the catalyst to change the salary structure. Who knows? But the WNBA needs to make money first before you start worrying about how much Caitlin Clark makes.
And in the beginning, it did a little bit. The Houston Comets were a pretty good team. They had Cynthia Cooper leading the way. And Witherspoon led the Liberty. And Tisha Panichero was doing really good. They had Old Dominion. She was leading Sacramento Monarchs. And people were watching it a little bit. And then they really went in a weird way with the scheduling. They were playing games during the day, on the weekends, and on weekdays. And it's like, what's going on? You can't even keep up with it. The WNBA is, you know, listen, hopefully it works out. Is Caitlin Clark a can't-miss star? That's the question. If she can't miss, Kev.
No. Nobody's can't miss.
Once again, I'm just saying, now you're going to go up against WNBA. You're going to go up against only professional girls now, okay? If you only drive when you go right and you step back when you go left, there will be a scouting report on you. I'm not saying Caitlin Clark isn't a brilliant passer. I'm not saying Caitlin Clark can't adjust her game because she doesn't have classes and can just simply focus on basketball. I think all these things are true, and I hope to God she's a star because she comes off as a pretty nice kid. A little whiny on the court, but a lot of superstars are that way. I'm not going to criticize her for it. But the fact of the matter is that this kid better be a star because the WNBA is putting an awful lot, and all of women's basketball, college, everything, is putting a whole lot of stock
on her shoulders.
This girl from Iowa. And I hope to God she's good, because otherwise it's going to be disappointing. We don't know that she's going to have a better career than Angel Reese, just as an example. I told you last week, I think Diana Taurasi was a better offensive player all around when she came out than I do believe that Caitlin Clark is. I think she had a little bit more to her game. Caitlin Clark had to carry her team. Diana Taurasi did not. A little different in that respect, but I hope this girl is able to really kick it up a notch. She's going to make millions on endorsements. She already is.
Yep.
So I wouldn't really worry about her salary so much. And everybody that's sitting there talking about how low her salary is, you're 100% right. This league has never been in the black, my financial friend Gino. Nobody would consider this league successful in any way, shape, or form. It has never been there. The NBA players are the ones and the NBA teams are the ones that subsidize this league. So they have to get past themselves here. start making some money and start drawing. What is it, Caitlin Clark's going to be with that 40-game season, and she's going to be televised for 36 of them, something like that? They are really building everything about 36. That. They already announced it. 36 out of 40. And, you know, and on a last-place team, and hopefully that she's able to turn that team around and make the WNBA successful. But, yeah.
Well, she's going to the situation where she's got the inside presence already with Aaliyah Boston.
Yes, she does.
So that helps her. And for that draft, the other interesting combination, Chicago Sky going Twin Towers with Camila Cardozo and Angel Reese as their top two draft picks.
Two girls that battled like each other a lot, and now they're going to be on the same squad. But again, I mean, listen, again, they're going up against other professional girls that are good players. These are not – there's no walkovers in this league.
Yeah.
Okay.
This isn't the Kelly Jollies of the world, Kev.
She was fired.
I know, but you remember as a player at Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Not quite like Michelle Marciniak, but that's okay.
Michelle Marciniak married. She's hyphenated now. I don't remember what her name is now.
NFL draft 8 days away. Any NFL points, guys? We'll get more into it next week because it'll be right the day before. But anything jump out at you right now?
I was gonna say real quick, you know, just look at the top 10 real quick. So just going in order, number one, Chicago. We're all in agreement, Caleb Williams, right?
I believe there's no way it's not Caleb Williams. Yeah.
Number two, Washington. Their decision. Gino, last week you said Drake May.
Drake May.
That's who you want? Darren, you think they're going May?
I think they're going May over Daniels.
You know, you start reading some of these mock drafts and start hearing some things. You know, sounds like Washington might be leaning towards May as well, so we'll see.
Listen, the mock drafts have had so little to talk about this year that they're making stuff up as they go. There's been no drama.
No.
And then New quarterbacks England, are going top three. So, I mean, it's just pretty simple.
New England's taking whoever's left. Their decision's going to be made by Washington. Four is Arizona. I mean, everything points to Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yep. I would agree.
Now's where it gets interesting, the Chargers. Do they trade down? Now, you're looking at Minnesota looking to get back into there if they really love J.J. McCarthy.
The Giants are also rumored to trade up as well, by the way.
Do you think – I haven't seen enough of McCarthy under pressure in a big spot to know if he can pull this off or not, to really be worthy of trading up one spot to go get J.J. McCarthy.
That Penn State game where he didn't throw a pass in the second half doesn't really – Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not criticizing him for it, but he didn't throw one pass. And they had a couple of balls that were dropped in the championship game that could have been picked.
How much of J.J. McCarthy's draft stock has risen because, there's another ex-Michigan quarterback who won, you know, 12,000 Super Bowls?
No, you're right.
Absolutely.
And it's not Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. So the Chargers have the choice. They can either trade down – or they want to with Harbaugh, and he might want to build the line. Joe Walt's going to be sitting there. Or they might want to go one of the weapons at wide receiver, be it Neighbors or Odunze.
I believe they're going to go wide receiver personally. I think that if they can trade down, they will. But I think that they would like to get one of those receivers because they've gotten rid of their guys. They're counting on Quentin Johnson to be the guy, the kid out of TCU who was okay as a rookie, but nothing that you would write home about. And they need to give their guy, Herbert, someone to throw to.
With Williams gone to the Jets and with Keenan Allen gone, they need
the Bears. Help. Yeah, absolutely.
Then you got the Giants at six. Again, if they're not interested in J.J. McCarthy, you know, if the Chargers stays put, do the two first rounders from Minnesota look appealing because they need talent?
I think it does because the Giants need two things: they need offensive line help and they need a wide receiver, a star wide receiver. And I think they have to go to the star wide receiver at this point. I think that's where they have to look.
So if they stay there, you're looking at the other one of probably Neighbors in Odunze, assuming the Chargers pick one there.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Titans, of course, if Walt's there, I think that's the obvious choice for them.
Yep.
I don't think there's any other. If Walt gets picked there, then I think they might go wide receiver to try to strengthen that core. They need some weapons on the outside as well. Eight, Atlanta, you're looking at defense, I think. They need a defensive end, pass rush, they need a cornerback. So you're looking at Dallas Turner. Maybe if they want to go corner, you're looking at Quinion Mitchell.
I think they're going to go. I think they're going to go for the rush. I think they're going to go for the pass rush. That's just my take.
Chicago, you know, again, depending on what happens in front of them, this is their second top 10 pick. This is their pick. Again, trade if McCarthy's still there. If not, I think they go best available.
I do, too. I think they're going to keep trying to build up that offensive line for Caleb, though. I think that they, I can see one of the offensive lineman tackles going right there.
So here's where you're looking at Fuaga, Fotanu, and Fashanu.
I think Fashanu is the top rated to, from what I saw, but I've seen conflicting things, but he was the one that was earliest top rated. So I'll stick with him for right now before they had the pro day where there's nobody blocking you or guarding you or doing anything, and you just simply get to do what you want and tell everybody how great you are. I'll go with the stats before the pro day.
And then we get to our Jets at 10. I know a lot of the mock drafts are looking at Brock Bowers. I still want one of those tackles. They need insurance because I don't trust Smith to get through a full season healthy. He hasn't proven that he can be healthy. You don't know about Morgan Moses for 100%. Hell, you don't even know for sure about AVT with the number of games he's missed. They need. I think they need to take one of those offensive tackles.
See, I'd like to get an offensive tackle if they feel like the talent of Bowers is that incredible. I guess I could see it. I would rather trade down here, get back into the second round because of the versatility of Vera Tucker. If he's healthy, it doesn't matter to me if it's a great guard or a great tackle that they draft, because I know I can move him if he's somebody part of my future. But like you said, he's been hurt 2 years in a row. We don't know what Carter Warren is. He was drafted last year off injury. He was a guy that was projected to go much higher than he did because of the injury. So he could be the swing tackle. He may not be good enough. He had no training camp last year.
Yep.
You know, for me, I think that Douglas always is going to err on the side of offensive line, and I'm fine with it. Personally, I want to trade down. I want to get into the second round. I want to try to fill in both of these, both of these roles if I can. Even if I got two offensive linemen, one in the first, one in the second, I got the kid from Oregon State in the first by trading down a few spots because somehow McCarthy's still sitting there, or somehow somebody loves one of the other quarterbacks that's coming in. Bone, I mean, you know, I can't see it, but you never know who somebody likes. Or Odunze happens to be sitting there because McCarthy goes and somebody wants that receiver. You know, I could see that being the case, but I do want. It's not even a tight end I want one more receiving weapon, whether it be a tight end or wide receiver, and I need an offensive lineman, and actually probably two. So I lean the same way as you, going for the old lineman, but if they can trade down, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yep, agreed. Okay. That's a quick look at the top 10. We'll see if anything changes getting up to the draft next week.
Okay. I got one last thing, and that's in soccer. Champions League quarterfinals ended yesterday and today. Paris Saint-Germain will face Borussia Dortmund next week in 2 weeks. And then Bayern Munich will face Real Madrid. And Real Madrid beat Manchester City today on penalty kicks 4-3. They took out last year's champion. Should be a very active semifinals. All four of these teams played really well yesterday and today to get in. Hopefully we'll have a good last couple of games here to crown a Champions League finalist. And that's all I got.
All right, just one last thing on the NCAA college basketball. As we know, Calipari heads to Arkansas. You know, you never thought someone would leave Kentucky for Arkansas. Well, John did. And when he did his interview, very funnily, he said, very funny reaction. He goes, so I met with the team and there is no team. I thought it was a well-done little line. He'll have five stars on that team in about 8 minutes is the way it works. Mark Pope heads from BYU to Kentucky, former Kentucky player. Patino couldn't have vouched for him any harder. I think that the St. John's and Kentucky are just about close to scheduling a home and home, where they go to Rupp and they will go to the Garden, which would be kind of cool. He also set one up with his son, New Mexico, where New Mexico is going to come to the Garden. So that'll be a little interesting as well. Transfer portal mess. Projection is there'll be over 2,000 players in the portal by the third.
Wow.
2,000. Too hard to keep all the names together. Portal ends on the 30th. So as of May 1st, you have to be in by that point. you know, but there's always going to be transfer opportunities for these guys. Guys just drop out now. It's so hard to keep in touch with it. What it's basically done is it's very hard to follow your team. You basically root for the laundry and you try to look at who in the beginning of the year is on your squad, because it's too hard to watch these guys develop, because once they start showing signs, somebody comes off and offers $1 million in NIL money and your guy leaves. That's just what it is. So mid-majors have a hard time keeping guys, even high majors that aren't huge, the Vanderbilts of the world, the Wakes of the world, the Seton Halls of the world, they can't keep guys at the same level where, you know, the big spenders like Kentucky and Kansas can go out and take your guy. So college sports is being ruined right before our very eyes. Conferences no longer exist like they used to. The Atlantic Coast Conference, you know, has teams like Cal and Stanford along with SMU. Tells you everything you need to know. It's just a little bit crazy. So that's a little take on college hoops. Anything else, boys, before we wrap up?
That's
it. I must have failed geometry if I thought Stanford was. I didn't realize they were East Coast or Atlantic Ocean.
It's the Pacific East Coast.
I also think you mean geography. Not geography.
Geography.
But you're always great at geometry, Kevin. No doubt about it. Gino, let's talk trig next. Anyway, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Kevin, here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. What we're saying is the Knicks don't win this series against the Sixers, the year's a freaking bust. So win the damn series. You know, follow our podcast anyway. You get a podcast, download a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post on social media. We're going to be posting our predictions for all the playoff series. You know, let us know what your opinions are. Share them, like them. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. John Sterling, we wish you the best in your retirement. Hopefully your health comes back. Fern Lundquist, you were amazing to listen to for all these years. We really enjoyed your golf. Sterling didn't make this comment before, but let's be honest, not the best play-by-play guy ever to do it. Missed a lot of things, but boy, were his broadcasts fun. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.